Kobe just knows what he's giving because he won't dominate conversations and he just sort of steers Jalen in different directions. And the producer, have you ever listened to Jalen Jacoby?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you know how like when Jalen's talking, the producer will put in a hip hop beat or something?
Yeah.
Like, I swear, that's just because it would just get so boring eventually, just Jalen going on and on. I think the producer's just like, oh God, it's starting, and he presses the button and just like slumps over.
Yeah.
that's what I imagined. But as far as my recording setup, I imagine that I'm recording Almighty Ball and the Almighty Podcast. And in fact, what I'm recording today is the Orlando 16-17 season preview. And I'm here today with Philip, the host of Locked On Magic and the, I guess, like, director of Orlando Magic Daily.
Something like that.
Does that cover it mostly?
Yeah.
Oh, and then you said on a recent podcast that you just started, like, an all-Orlando sports thing.
I actually just shut that down. I ran it for about a year. It was a labor of love, but just way too much work to cover everything that's going on in the city.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I was wondering to myself when I heard you talking about it, like, how you deal with that. Because if you record daily podcasts, I can't even pull off daily podcasts. And you're always talking about things that you wrote. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. Like, I thought I worked hard.
Well, I'm not talking about things that only I wrote. But, yeah, I mean, I do contribute quite heavily to Orlando Magic Daily. And
yeah.
I was running Orlando Sports Daily. I had a few contributors here and there. But, you know, the interest wasn't quite there as much as I would have liked it to be, and I couldn't put the attention into it because I was starting the daily podcast and running Orlando Magic Daily and not getting any sleep. And so I'm backing off some things, I hope.
You know that Nas song, New York State of Mind? It's I never sleep because sleep is the cousin of death.
Something like that.
I think that song was about me. But anyways, hey, Philip, where can our listeners find you on Twitter?
Best place to find me is at @omagicdaily. That's where you'll see most of my magic thoughts. So that would probably be the place to find me.
Magic thoughts about the magic or just like magic thoughts?
Magic thoughts about the Orlando Magic, sometimes Arrested Development jokes, sometimes other random stuff that I think of, but Magic Daily.
So by Arrested Development jokes, do you mean that you'll mention something and then two seasons later, like, the inside joke will come up and everyone's like, oh yeah, there is that Asian kid living in the wall. Like, I totally forgot about him.
Mostly stuff like that, yes. Like, a lot of references to obscure Magic players that only true fans would know.
Okay. So, let's see. I can list, like, three Magic players, I think.
Okay.
So, this podcast is going to be hard to do since, like, I didn't even know the Orlando Magic existed until yesterday, but...
that's why I'm here.
That line of joking didn't end up being as funny as I thought it would be at the end. I thought I would riff somewhere funny, but it didn't get there. Anyways, jokes aside, Philip, let's get serious. Okay, so... the Magic, to me, were one of the most confusing teams in the league in terms of what their thought process was when they were doing things. And then I had this realization, or I was prompted to have this realization when I was talking to Sam Vecini, shout out. And I was talking to him, and he said that he didn't have a problem with the Magic's decision-making because, you know, even if the quality of the moves or whatever didn't make sense, like, the moves themselves, the process made sense, which is they looked at their team, they saw that they were bleeding talent, like Tobias Harris, like now Dwayne Dedman's gone, maybe Oladipo, you know, they didn't get quite as much in return as they wanted, but they're basically getting rid of bundles of young talent, which they don't see in their long-term future for good players or people who, you know, they can make a playoff team around. So that makes sense to me. Is that how you see this as sort of a trying to get away from the unfortunate trend that the Magic have of, you know, bleeding young talent that they've arguably had since Shaq left, honestly?
You know, I think a lot of what the Magic did this summer was with one goal in mind. And whether you like it or not, it feels like the Orlando Magic are in a playoffs or bust season. It's been 4 years since the Magic last made the playoffs. Last time they made the playoffs was last year Dwight Howard was around. They elected to try this long rebuild where they built through the draft, and for whatever reason, through bad luck, through, you know, maybe some picks that, you know, weren't risky enough or not shoot enough or just not building the right combination together. They just didn't get that core together that they wanted. And they're trying to be smart and say, okay, we don't think Tobias Harris is going to be part of our future, or we want to invest in other guys and Tobias Harris is standing in their way a little bit. So let's ship him out for something and see what happens. Yeah. Where I think the disconnect comes from for a lot of people is, okay, so you've got, you know, Tobias Harris, you're trading him. Why aren't you getting young players back in return? Why aren't you getting, you know, players that can help your future? And the truth is, the Magic are so desperate to make the playoffs now, and maybe desperate isn't the right word, but it feels like the Magic are so focused on making the playoffs in the short term that they were ready to push in for free agency and just see what they could get and move forward from there. They were kind of done rebuilding and done kind of focusing on the future and focusing on the now a little bit more. So in that sense, a lot of what the moves the Magic made makes some sense to me, because they're starting to sell some of their young guys, cash them in, see what they can get, and build a team identity, kind of force a team identity that they weren't able to get for the last 4 years.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. And I was thinking about why that might be the case, that organizationally they're so trigger happy. You know, again, I'm not sure if it's fair to think of them in terms of their history, but
I think it absolutely is.
Okay, well, fair enough then. I'm glad I had you on to validate that thought process, because I was just thinking, like, you know, they're not used to a long-term rebuild. They're used to, you know, boom, Nick Anderson, boom, Shaq.
Shaq leaves, you still have Penny. Yeah. Penny leaves. A year later, you get Tracy McGrady and Grant Hill.
Right.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolute. And sorry for stepping over you there, but I think that's absolutely the observation. It's something that I've been aware of, and I begin to hear the team start saying this as well. In the 27 years of Magic basketball, and it's hard to, you know, they're only 27 years old, they've never been out of the playoffs for more than 4 years. So this four-year playoff drought is the longest playoff drought in franchise history.
Yeah, yeah.
And it ties for the longest. The other longest was the first 4 years of the Magic's history. They went to the playoffs for the first time in 1984, which was their fifth year in existence.
Right.
So the Magic fans, ownership, management, they've all been with this team for a very, very long time. DeVos has owned the team since 1991, I believe. Alex Martins has been with the team on and off since the very, very beginning. He's the CEO, essentially the CEO of the team, and runs the day-to-day operations. They're not used to going through these pains and being not necessarily patient or being impatient, but they're not used to having some failure in the draft. Every time the Magic needed something to hit in the draft, they've always hit it. Whether it was getting Shaq in the draft, getting Dwight Howard more than a decade later, they've always hit that draft pick. And so they went back to play the draft and they didn't hit this time. And so now they're stuck trying to say, okay, well, what do we do? Do we stick with this core that we don't quite know what it is? Do we go out and find a star? How do we find a star? Or do we keep going back to the lottery until we win? And it seems like the Magic kind of decided we've just got to push our way forward no matter what it takes, start cashing in guys, and get to the playoffs and figure things out from there.
Okay, so, you know, first off, like, it's interesting that you validated that idea that there is perhaps a organizational history aspect to all of this going on. But that being said, I still think that probably a move like the Tobias Harris one, which is universally head-scratching, close to that anyways, if you do want to justify it, though, it's with the idea in mind that we're opening up space so that Aaron Gordon can play. And then I guess we're also saying, well, why can't he just play next to Aaron Gordon? And I guess they're saying that just won't fit. So I assume they're saying, okay, moving Tobias Harris is committing to Aaron Gordon and Mario Hezonja. That's the way that I was sort of thinking about it. So that decision-making seems to me to indicate that, you know, they do have an idea about what they think this core is going to look like going into the future. And although they're rounding out the roster with kind of expensive free agents, they're, you know, cashing in their chips and stuff, they're not doing it at least without the idea in mind that we do have that young core, which has Hezonja and Aaron Gordon at least. So let me ask. So that young core that I think that they think that they have, I just straight up want to make sure that I'm thinking about this team right. Is it Elfrid Payton, Fournier, Hezonja, Aaron Gordon, and Bismack? In 2020, do you think that they have the expectation that that might be their starting lineup?
Vaguely, yeah. I think you're right. I kind of get the sense that they signed Evan Fournier, I think, with kind of the same thought process that they had signing Tobias Harris, in that they knew they were going to get Tobias Harris at a pretty good price, at a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
And they could keep him around for I fully expected Tobias Harris to get traded within 2 years, because I think his contract, the way it's structured, was he got paid like 16 this year, 17.2 next year, and then it declined. So it's like a middle-loaded contract. Huh. And especially with the cap getting ready to increase, I think they knew that he'd have more value as his contract aged.
But they didn't use that value.
I know. No. Hey,
that's so confusing.
I am just as confused, because when I look at this Magic roster, I think this roster could really use Tobias Harris. And like I remember, like literally after the trade, when the Magic were struggling some on defense, I was like, you know, Orlando could really use a three with some length, kind of like Tobias Harris. Like it was just like. I think this gets into larger issues of rebuilding and how you rebuild properly, I guess. I think rebuilds fail when ownership pushes the pace too much because of, say, artificial deadlines. And I've gotten into trouble for thinking this and saying this, because a lot of Magic fans are like, we got to make the playoffs now. 4 years is too long. How much longer can Rob Hennigan take? Like, there's a lot of that conversation going on, certainly among the fan base. I would imagine it's been going on at higher levels too. But to me, this team wasn't quite ready to take the free agent step. No one's ready to buy what this team has. So, like, if you ask me what this team's core is going to look like in 2020, ideally, yeah, it's going to be a team centered around Elfrid Payton, Aaron Gordon, and Mario Hezonja. I think those are the three most talented players with the most potential. Bismack Biyombo is probably there too. Evan Fournier, I kind of see as still something of a trade chip. Like, I think he's a very nice player, a very good player, a solid role player. But at the same time, this team is so desperate for a star. It's so desperate for someone that can kind of stir the drink a little bit. I think they're really hoping Aaron Gordon turns into that this year, and that he's ready to take a big step up in his career. That's what they really envisioned for Victor Oladipo, and Oladipo just didn't take that step up this year, and the Magic weren't willing to pay him the max, and thus he became expendable a little bit more with Evan Fournier as a free agent as well. So it's still very hard to say what this team's core is, because so much of it is unproven. Aaron Gordon, and I'm sure we'll talk about him on this podcast. But
no, I wasn't going to bring him up.
Yeah, he's not important at all.
You want to talk about CJ Watson?
Yeah, let's talk about CJ Watson.
Keep going.
Aaron is just this bundle of untapped potential. I'm still not quite sure what he is, and I think a lot of us have debated whether he's a three or a four. Where does he fit best? And it seems like they're going to play him at the three. And I'm frankly a little skeptical that that's going to be where he's best at, because he's just not a shooter.
I don't know. I think this might be, although, like, you know, Serge Ibaka, I suppose if we're assuming that he's 28 or 29.
You have to assume Bismack Biyombo's 23 as well.
Well, I mean, okay, so Bismack, like, he might be 26, but that's still okay.
Yeah.
But I mean, if, like, that's 3 years old. You know, if Serge Ibaka is 3 years older than people think, that's a problem, you know? But that being said, let's assume that he is 28, 29. Then on offense, Serge Ibaka is playing a spot-up three-point shooter, which is typically a role played by a three. So offensively, Aaron Gordon is still playing the four.
Yeah.
He's going to play near the basket. He's going to go downhill, something like a Paul Millsap. And then on defense, Serge Ibaka is going to play a weak side shot blocking for the same type of thing that he made popular. And I think that slotting Aaron Gordon into this role of, and I mean, this is something that Frank Vogel actually popularized during those years that Indiana was the best defense in the league. What he started doing is using Paul George as this roaming three, this like free safety three that dug on drivers, that sort of like left his man sometimes to disturb things. He was basically thinking, okay, if health defense is going to be a thing that happens, we're going to put an incredible health defender right in the center of the court. And so what you've seen now is, like, Popovich is doing that in San Antonio with Kawhi. Stotts is doing it with Al-Farouq Aminu in Portland. And Brad Stevens is doing it in Boston with Jay Crowder. And they're all really good coaches. So I think that, like, that's a good idea. So I think that, like, actually playing him on the three defensively and then on offense as the four is probably perfect, right?
Yeah, and I, that's actually like one of the reasons I really liked the Tobias Harris pairing, because they complemented each like literally, like I sat there, I was just like, Aaron Gordon plays defense better at the three and Tobias Harris was better defensively at the four, and on offense Tobias Harris is better as a three and Aaron Gordon is a four, and so I like that versatility. And like you said, I think they can pull that off with Serge Ibaka some. How Nikola Vucevic fits into it is I think the next big question, but I mean it's not that it can't be done. I think it can be. I think there's ways around it, and Gordon has enough talent, and I think he's improved his shooting that we'll slowly see it begin to tick up this year, especially him being healthy this summer has probably been humongous for him, and we don't even know it yet because we haven't really seen him play very much. It'll be interesting. Like, yeah, I think a lot of what the Magic are trying to do this year is going to be centered on whether Aaron Gordon can take a leap, can take a step up in his career. Whether he can begin to define himself as a player, whether it's as a three or a four. So I think that's kind of where the Magic are at. They're still trying to figure out who their guys are that they drafted, but now there's that little extra bit of pressure to start winning, and so they're starting to try. They're trying more forcefully to inject an identity and inject some veteran leadership and veteran takeover of the for the young guys.
Yeah, and that might make sense. You included Elfrid Payton in this potential long-term core. I'm not so sure about that, but it sounds like you think that at least that's a potential thing. That being said, take away Elfrid Payton and add Oladipo. Would you be happier with that?
The team would still need a point guard. I like Oladipo a lot. I think he's a really good player. My issue with Oladipo is how do you use him if he's not your star player? And I think Oladipo just kind of stagnated last year. He's a great defender. I think he would have worked really well with what Frank Vogel was trying to do, especially on defense. But the question then becomes about value, because I mean, it's not just about who you have on the floor. It's about how much you're going to pay them when their time comes. And
yeah.
Oladipo is the kind of player that's going to intrigue someone enough to give him a max. And I'm not quite sure he's that kind of player. Last year was the year we were supposed to answer the question, can Oladipo make a star turn? Can he become a star in this league? And he kind of struggled a lot. His shooting didn't really improve significantly. Evan Fournier essentially proved more valuable to at least Scott Skiles, and I think the numbers actually bore it out early in the season that Fournier was a better player. Now, Oladipo was probably the only guy in the roster that could go out and drop 40 on somebody, which he did at least once, probably I think once or twice last season. But the consistency wasn't there. And at the end of the season, we were asking the same question, can Victor Oladipo become a star? I was perfectly fine trying to see that again. Like, I wasn't someone that was panicking and saying the Magic need to make all these moves. I thought that if they added a few key veterans, really committed themselves to defense, maybe answered the Vucevic question, they'd be in better shape. But at the same time, if you're going to make a trade to improve your roster, with Tobias Harris gone already, Victor Oladipo was the only guy to trade. And so they cashed him in for an elite defender in Serge Ibaka. So, I can't be too upset on that.
Okay, so you said you still need a point guard. I don't see why Victor Oladipo can't play at the one, you know? And then secondarily, why is it that Elfrid Payton is a point guard but Oladipo isn't? Because it seems like, first of all, Elfrid Payton, the comparison to Rajon Rondo is nice, but, you know, pretending that Rajon Rondo is a player, I understand the whole Carmelo thing, and I appreciate it, too. But it seems to me like if there was a player in NBA history who you could not have a statistical projection of because they're such a free radical, such a unquantifiable player, like, it seems like Rondo would be the least Carmelo-able player in, like, NBA history. He's crazy, right? And I think that even if Elfrid Payton could be that type of distributor doesn't really work so well. And then the type of player who you might want at point guard, it seems like, I guess, okay, so all of that stuff aside, what can Elfrid Payton do better than Victor Oladipo? Because I don't know.
I think his distribution, his ability to get into the lane looking to pass is a big part of it. Certainly, Oladipo has a scoring ability, and Oladipo can be a distributor, but the Magic tried Oladipo at the point, his first and second years, and he really just couldn't get the team into the offense fast enough. What Peyton does really well when he's on is get the team into their sets pretty quickly. Kind of direct, he does direct traffic a little bit. He's able to get into the paint off pick and rolls, and he'll do it looking to pass. He's very good for a guy who can't shoot. He's very good at sucking defenses in and getting the ball back out. Now he does have to take the next step, and I think your trepidation that is Elfrid Payton really part of this core is a fair one. Elfrid Payton has to prove himself this year that he can be a starting point guard in this league. And I mean, I think he can, but he's got to prove it on the court. If he doesn't, then he's going to be kind of thrown into the scrap heap. I've always kind of said this about Nikola Vucevic, and I think it's translated over to Peyton after he struggled so much last year. Point guard and center are such difficult positions to pin down and find that if you have even just kind of like a half decent option, you've got to make sure you have your replacement in place before you trade him. I feel like the Magic, I mean, Nikola Vucevic has a huge defensive weakness, and it's a big problem. I don't think that the Magic could trade Nikola Vucevic until they have a replacement in place. Yeah. Now they have Biombo and they have Ibaka, and now you start hearing Nikola Vucevic trade rumors pick up a little bit, and everyone's asking, well, what are the Magic going to do with Nikola Vucevic? I feel like Peyton's the same way. Peyton is good enough that you have someone that can play the role and play the position well. You just don't know if he can do it at an elite level or at a winning level. And so you can't quite give up on him until you know who you're going to use to replace him.
That's an interesting point.
And he's still young too. And I should mention he's played 2 years in the league, so he's still at a point where he can make some mistakes and prove himself. But year three is when you have to prove yourself that you can hang in the NBA. And so this is a humongous year for Elfrid Payton.
That sounds to me like an arbitrary deadline.
It does sound like an arbitrary deadline, but like, no, I mean, it isn't because the reason I think that third year is so important is for first round picks, you become a free agent after that fourth year. And for the most part, players are who they are after 4 years. Like you know who a player is. And so if you're going to extract value in a trade out of that player, or you're determining, well, how much are we going to pay this player in free agency? That third year is where you set that extension contract. That's a big year for any rookie player because they can set themselves up for a big contract with how they play in the third year.
My concern is that Scott Skiles is a coach of developmental purgatory. You know, like my concern is that by all statistical metrics and eye test metrics, Oladipo was poised to take his big leap last year and he got benched. Victor Oladipo shouldn't be benched. That's like not a good decision. And I mean, you talk about arrested development, okay? And you talk about jokes. It was a joke that Oladipo was stuck in arrested development all of last year because of Scott Skiles' sort of warped system. So I mean, I don't know. I feel like the Magic are in a position where they started to question a player who is sort of like, okay, it wasn't a great draft, whatever. But he was like a consensus. You pick this guy second.
Yes.
He could be special. And like, he's not bad at anything.
No, except his three-point shooting was improving, but still not great. He was able to get to the basket, but couldn't finish or draw fouls effectively. You know, there's certainly some warning signs. And yes, the Magic's biggest problem in this four-year rebuild has been they've had two bad coaches. Jacques Vaughn was a babysitter for 2 years and then couldn't turn the corner and help the team win and just couldn't get them to another level as a team. Scott Skiles, his problem is he doesn't see the forest for the trees. He cares so much. He only cares about winning the game in front of him. He doesn't care how people develop. I mean, I think most of us fully recognize how he stunted Mario Hezonja's growth last year by having such a short leash on him and not trusting him at all. The Oladipo decision was done. The decision to bench Oladipo was done because Skiles was trying to win games. He wasn't trying to develop players. And it didn't matter to him who was supposed to be the star. It mattered to him who was going to help me win the game. And you know, I did a long post on this after the announcement, after Scal suggested he change the lineup. And, you know, if you looked at the statistics and the numbers and how the team was constructed, yeah, Oladipo should have been coming off the bench. And the first few games he came off the bench, he played like gangbusters with the second unit and really, really looked good and produced. And then he hit that post All-Star swing that he did the previous year as well. And so it was always hard to figure out who was at fault for Oladipo not turning into the player everyone wanted him to be, because he just never showed consistency. If Oladipo, I mean, to me, if Oladipo really was that good, it would have borne itself out on the court that he was much better than Evan Fournier. And I thought Fournier played better with Oladipo next to him rather than apart. And it took the Magic a long time to figure out what kind of lineup they needed to throw out there. And I think a lot of that's because they didn't have good leadership and they just couldn't form the identity they were trying to create.
Yeah. The Fournier-Oladipo pairing worked well, but that being said, moving on, using the Scott Skiles thing as a diving board. So a head coach is supposed to do all sorts of things. So you're failing at your job. Like, you get demerits as a head coach when you... it's not like you're like, okay, just win right now. That's not your job. Your job is to take care of everything. Your job is to be a Popovich and, like, put everything in place and keep all the plates spinning. Like, you can't just make sure that you have one plate spinning really well. And I think that now you have a good guy who, even though there's maybe some organizational question marks, I think that Frank Vogel has demonstrated not only an ability to be, like, a hyper-elite defensive coach. I mean, like I said, I think that Thibodeau, in a lot of ways, was the defined defense for half a decade with the whole ice thing with Noah dropping back and going over pick and rolls. And I think that Vogel sort of instituted the second, you know, evolution of that, of the NBA defense. And being that good of a defensive NBA coach means that you're a contender level coach. Like, he sort of like defined how NBA defenses have adapted over time. And that's meaningful, I think. So now that you have Frank Vogel, who also is sort of a positive guy, you know, who also I think is a good organizational band-aid that will stick. It's not like one that will like come off. It's like one that you keep on until the scab heals and like there's nothing there, unless you get fired by Larry Bird.
He wasn't fired. They didn't sign him to a new contract. Right. I know. Yeah. The Magic. I don't know if I'm allowed to curse on here. The Magic fell ass backwards into that one.
Oh, ass isn't a curse. Okay. If you said ass, I would have to bleep the hole.
just like you did there.
Yeah.
The Magic backed their way into a legitimate coach. I agree completely with everything you say. I think you give Vogel last year's Magic team, they're probably five or six. I mean, I don't know what the effect would be. It'd be probably at least three, four, or five wins more. Yeah. And that gets you into the conversation for the playoffs, which is what they always wanted.
Yeah. Well, so I can't like justify this, but, you know, the wild swinging and the utter lack of consistency in terms of how good is this Magic team last year, where they, you know, at certain points at the start of the year looked like they were really good and they were going to be like a definite playoff team, and then they lost 12 in a row, you know. Yeah. Like, so the ups and downs, that seems to me like a bad coach, because I think that the tenor of the locker room was changing at that point, and it was like people were motivated, then not motivated. It's sort of like in Houston.
It was the Scott Skiles effect on steroids.
Right,
because usually it takes, like, everything that happened last year, I think everyone knew the moment they hired Scott Skiles was going to happen. We just figured we'd get to the playoffs first, and then it would happen, and then we could dump Skiles and make Adrian Griffin the head coach, and everything would be fine. You know, there were so many reports coming out after Skiles' surprise resignation that he was thinking of quitting in January when the team was 2-12, and it was just like, I mean, what is a team supposed to do about that, other than don't hire the guy in the first place because you know how the story ends? Yeah. I think the Magic's gamble was very short-sighted, and it's not like they had a ton of great options in that coaching market anyway, but their gamble was, we know Scott Skiles can get us, can every team he's coached has played really good defense, which is something the Magic have always said they wanted, and he'll get us to the playoffs, and then things will fall apart, and we can deal with the mess once we're in, because once we're in, then doors start opening for better coaches, they start opening for better players.
Okay, so that makes sense.
It happened so fast that it caught them by, I mean, it caught them by surprise. Like, you know, you're not going to fire the coach after 1 year. And I think to some extent, so many of the players were so young and unproven that if they weren't listening to what Skiles was saying, that says more about them than it does about Skiles. Because you know what Skiles is and what he's going to do to a team eventually. If you're a guy like Alfred Payton, who's played 1 year in the league and you're not doing something that proved it could work at the beginning of the season, and all of a sudden you're no longer doing it or you're tuning out the coach, I mean, what does that really say about the players on your team? And I think that's kind of the uncomfortable narrative that the Magic, you know, are hoping will be glossed over with Vogel now in instead of Skiles, because Vogel will do a lot of the same things. It's going to be a big defensive focus, and if you're not going to be committed to defense, I think you're going to be shipped out now.
Yeah, you would hope so.
Yeah.
I'm heavily implying that I think Vucevic should be traded, but... We'll get into it.
Don't let Magic fans hear you say that.
Well, if he can, like, go back in time and take away, I think I'm a starter, then, like, he should stay and come off the bench and, like, drop 20 like an Enes Kanter. That'd be awesome. Hey, come on, Chris. Like, we're not talking about that right now. So you said make or break season. I think that they'll probably make the playoffs. I think that having a defense that good up against Eastern Conference competition, you're going to smother teams. It's going to be fine. You'll make the playoffs. Probably, you know, and probably a strong probably. I probably think more about the Magic's potential just because of the mathematical inevitability of holding the opposing team to 80 points, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and like, I think the Magic statistically realized what their bet needed to be. I mean, what was it? 12 of the top 13 defenses in the league by defensive rating last year made the playoffs. Yeah. Like, they know defense is their ticket in.
And there are concerns about the offense. Hopefully, they're ones that will resolve themselves. When we talk later about Aaron Gordon, we'll talk about how that might work, him as sort of the, I think pot stirrer is the word that you used.
Yeah.
That being said, I want to know, what is a make or break season? What does it look like to break the Magic? Like, what happens if you don't make the playoffs? What happens if this year isn't a success?
I think it depends on how things go. Like, let's use the ESPN forecasting as an example. I think they had the Magic winning 35 games again. If the Magic win 35 games again, I would say it's pretty safe to assume there's going to be some major changes to the front office. I think they want to see continued steady progress at the very, very, very least.
Yeah.
You know, they've gone from 20 to 23 to 25 to 35 wins. That's, as for whatever you want to say about Skiles, that's still progress. That's still showing some forward momentum that you're getting somewhere.
Sure.
Let's say they win 41 games and miss the playoffs by a game. That probably means, okay, everyone's safe. There's clearly something there. You know, the Magic are maybe a piece or two away from getting into the playoffs. They're now attractive to free agents. I think that's the big key, is they've got to become attractive to free agents again. And it's tough to do that when you're at the bottom of the standings.
Okay.
Have another, like, big collapse. You know, I don't know what's going to happen. Like, to me, it feels like the playoffs are kind of the bottom line. Make the playoffs or, you know, heads are going to roll. I think there might be some leeway, but if the Magic aren't playing meaningful games in April, I would say there's going to be a lot of change coming to the front office, and the Magic are going to look to push forward in a new direction with a new voice leading the way.
Okay,
Frank Vogel being safe, though.
Well, but, I mean, there's a long history with coaches that stay in front offices that change. Like, normally if there's a new GM, yeah, there's a new coach very soon. So
yes,
that's sort of a frightening possibility
it
to
is.
Me. Although, like, if that was the exception to the rule, if the Magic were the exception to the rule and they got a fresh new front office, that might be good. But, like, I think you got to hold on to Vogel.
Oh, yeah. No, I think so, too.
Luckily, I think you guys will make the playoffs. I'm generally pretty good on stuff like this. So, you know, you're safe. You don't need to.
I'm happy.
As a Magic fan, as a Magic pundit, I'm sure you've been worrying about it, but you guys are fine. Now you, like, sleep at night, so don't worry about it.
Excellent. I'm happy to have your seal of approval, because I'm still a little skeptical.
But taking that next step, though, I think that we are both conscious of the realization that, you know, I think that you talked about both on your podcast and then briefly on this podcast, how do we get the defense moving? How do we get the defense on their heels, you know? And so the whole principle of a big three is that you have three players who, depending on what they do, draw a double team. Right. So like if Bosch is at the top left of the key, you can't just throw an average defender at him. You have to double team, or if it's Dirk, you know, someone like that, you have to double team or have a lockdown defender. Right. If LeBron's driving, you have to quintuple team him to like really make him stop. So with that in mind, I tend to think of teams in terms of, is this a contending team or is this a team that can potentially be a contending team? Like, who are the 1, 2, 3, and then 4? Because I think that you have to have a player who can capitalize off of all of this destruction that's going on. So it seems to me, right, Evan Fournier is a good 4. I think that, like, that'd be great. But then what? Because, like, Aaron Gordon absolutely could be a 1. But is there anyone else who could be a 1? Because I think Aaron Gordon could also potentially be a 2 or a 3 or a glue guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's a starter, yeah. Probably.
I mean... It's hard. I mean, it's really hard to tell. I'll fully admit that. I mean, I'm maybe a little higher on Serge Ibaka and his offensive abilities than some other people. But, you know, I think I don't know if Ibaka's a guy you can dump the ball to in the post very often. But, you know, I think he's someone that, you know, you keep him around the basket. You use him as a stretch. Like, he can put up some points for you. He may not necessarily break down a defense, but he'll put up points. You know, Nikola Vucevic is, you know, for all his flaws on the defensive end, he's proven he's a very capable offensive player. And as I think Zach Lowe pointed out, a really good passer at the center position, too. He's someone that you can run a little offense through. You've just got to make – I mean, he's just got to – be willing to be a little more physical and work in the post a little bit more and not rely so much on his jumper, which is
pretty effective. Oh, so let me reframe this question.
Okay, sure.
I think I misspoke maybe. So it's going to be at least 3 years until the Magic are going to be contending in a real way, right?
Yes.
So what I mean is, out of your young core, who is potentially a 1, 2, and 3?
Okay.
That's what I mean. That, of course, is another one of those questions that it's like, how would you know? I don't know either. But is it realistic to think that Aaron Gordon could end up being a 1? Do you want to roll your dice on that? Do you think that Mario Hezonja could be the Kyrie to Aaron Gordon's LeBron, or the Kobe to Aaron Gordon's Shaq? And then number 3, is Elfrid Payton going to be able to be like a third best player on a team that is contending? Is that a viable thing?
Okay.
Yeah.
I gotcha. I think that's a really good question, because I always argue, you know, the NBA is full of so many talented players. The teams that struggle are the ones that don't put their players in the best roles to succeed. Like I said, like, I think Victor Oladipo is a perfect example of this. He may not be a star on a good team. Like, the Magic used him as a number one option, and he may not be that. He may be better off as a number two guy next to Russell Westbrook, or as a number three guy coming off the bench playing the sixth man role. And so I think he's actually going to be really, really good in Oklahoma City. On a really good team, Aaron Gordon and Mario Hezonja have the potential to be kind of first, second option guys.
I could see that happening. I'm not sure how realistic it is, but yeah. I can see it.
Yeah, and I'm not sure they'll be the top guy on a really good team. On a playoff team, they're probably second options. Maybe, you know, Gordon, I think, reminds me a little bit of Sean Marion in a lot of ways. Like, Sean Marion was a very solid player, but when he had his best years, when his teams played the best, he was the third option. That may be where Aaron Gordon eventually ends up. Elfrid Payton, because he's a point guard and because of the way that he plays with his lack of shooting, needs the ball in his hands a lot. So, you know, can he really be your second, third guy too? No. Like, I think that's a legitimate question, and kind of the problem the Magic found themselves in with how their drafts played out is they didn't get any guys who were clear cut guys to build around. They don't have a guy that you can look at him and say, this is a guy, this is our franchise, this is the guy we're building around. The closest thing they had was Victor Oladipo, and it's very unclear whether he could take that step up, and the Magic clearly lost patience or realized they needed to cash something in, and that was the thing that they cashed in. So I don't think the Magic have that first option. They have some guys that can maybe be second options. I like Evan Fournier a lot. I think if needed, he could be a second option on a good team, not a great team. but it's really hard to determine what they have that is going to help them when, you know, they're competing for championships or if they have that.
Napa
know
how. The Napa guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolored paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how.
At all.
Okay, so it sounds like, and what I meant by Evan Fournier being the number four is like the J.R. Smith to this Cavs. The guy who's capitalizing off of all of this defensive disruption.
Gotcha.
I think that Evan Fournier could be the number four guy on a championship team. If you switched out Evan Fournier for J.R. Smith, that would be fine.
That would be more than fine, because I think Fournier can relieve some of the... I think using your analogy, I think Fournier for the Cavs could play a little bit of that third option and give Kevin Love a little bit of a breather to be a spot-up guy, or Kyrie to be a spot-up guy.
Yeah.
He could kind of float between those two positions. And honestly, I think that's why the Magic ultimately decided to keep Fournier over Oladipo, because I don't know if Oladipo could do all of that.
Man, I don't want to like beat a dead Victor Oladipo.
Sorry.
No.
I know. I don't mean to either.
Man, I would like this team so much better with Victor Oladipo as opposed to Elfrid Payton. I don't get Elfrid Payton. I think, unfortunately, and I'm happy to have you back on, but like it would take a whole podcast to really thresh out fully the whole Victor Oladipo versus Elfrid Payton thing. And like, I need to leave it alone, but I just...
It was a big question. And I think, I mean, a lot of us have just kind of come to accept at this point that management is really enamored with Elfrid Payton, and they're going to stick with him at least for another year. It wouldn't surprise me if they're just really invested in him. And they gave up a lot for him. They gave up Dario Saric and a first-round pick for Elfrid Payton. So, they made a pretty big investment in him already, and they feel like he can be their point guard of the future. I agree. I'm not 100% sold. I think he can be. I'm willing to give him another year to show it.
Yeah.
But last year was a huge step back for him. Like, it was a humongous step back for him. But at the same time, when he was playing really, really well, especially at the beginning of the season, and then a little bit toward the end, the Magic were a significantly better team. And so getting a good Elfrid Payton has this intangible effect on the team.
Yeah.
And when he's bad, they're really bad.
Yeah.
He's a hard guy to figure out. There's no doubt about it. And the opinions should run the gamut on it.
Oh, man. Okay. We got to have a truce here. This needs to be a yes or no answer. And then I gotta move on. But I think probably the closest thing is like a Ricky Rubio, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you. You did it.
I was just getting that argument with someone today.
Okay. Cool. Awesome. Sweet. He nailed that. Like, high five over the camera. All right. It sounds like you think that. Let me run through this and see if I can like say what your views were. Right.
Sure.
Aaron Gordon is probably a second option on a contender, maybe a one, and then Hezonja is probably a third option, maybe a two, and then you agree that a number four, if it's Evan Fournier, like that's great.
Yeah, I think maybe I'm a little higher on Fournier. I think Fournier could be a 2, 3, or 4, and I think that versatility is what makes him valuable.
Yeah, that's interesting, and
let's just take this Magic team that we're going to see this year that you think is going to be a playoff team. Fournier is probably going to be the first, second, third option on this team. I think he'll end up being the leading scorer for the team, depending on even if Vucevic makes it the whole year. I think Fournier is going to probably be the leading scorer on the team.
Yeah, I could see that. I think that makes sense. But for this iteration of the team, I think you know, if the Magic as currently constructed got to a place where they were a legitimate contender, that probably Aaron Gordon would be the leading scorer.
Yes.
Because Aaron Gordon... I think people say that his best case scenario is Paul George, but I think that, you know, and no one's as good as LeBron James, but he's probably the most going to play like LeBron James, just like a downhill monster.
Case scenario to me is Sean Kemp with a jumper before he got fat.
How about Charles Barkley?
I'll take Charles Barkley.
Before he got fat.
Before he got fat. Which was when?
Okay, so we agree on the type of player, though.
Yeah, yeah.
But if Vucevic gets traded, do you know anyone who you could trade for a first-round pick in next year's draft? Because sources say that, like, it's a really great draft, and maybe you can get your number one option for the future there. Or is there anyone who you think that you could trade Vucevic for who could, you know, get a little bit of that Orlando Magic and end up being, like, a first, second option that pulls the team together?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really sure. I have no sense of what Nikola Vucevic's value is on the trade market. I think what's probably going to end up happening is the Magic will trade him at the deadline to a team that's desperate for some front court help that the Magic don't need, and the Magic will get like a guard in return. You know, maybe there'll be a team looking, maybe the Magic will be in a position where, you know, they're just barely in the playoffs. They think they can climb from like the 7 seed to the 5 seed, and a star comes available, and the Magic package, you know, Nikola Vucevic's very affordable deal. I think he's getting paid $12 million a year for the next 2 years after the season, which is ridiculously affordable in this market for his production. Plus, say, Jeff Green, who's a 1 year, $15 million for a star of some sort. I mean, I don't know who it could be. I mean, I think Brandon Knight's been thrown around as a possible name from the Suns. You know, maybe Chicago flames out and the Jimmy Butler idea starts coming around again. The Magic were supposedly one of the teams making offers on him since February at least. You know, the Magic are going to be looking for kind of distressed properties, guys who are itching to get out of their situation. And Boston's always lurking, and they've got better assets than the Magic, and the Magic are they're just kind of stuck in line waiting their turn. And so, I mean, I think I don't know what Vucevic can get you right now. I think right now he's probably going to get you two rotation players, which doesn't solve that problem for the Magic, because a lot of teams, I think, know what Vucevic is. And like you said, he's kind of like an Enes Kanter. He's really, really good coming off the bench and leading kind of a bench unit. But because of his defensive issues, it's really difficult to start him full time. And it's really difficult, even with a rim protector like Serge Ibaka, to have him on the court if you're hoping to have a really good defense.
I agree with that. But when you said distressed options, right, like I thought of the most distressed option in the league, Boogie, right? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, you know who's a part owner of the Kings? Shaq. Mm-hmm. So what if Shaq thinks, man, I wish I had stayed in Orlando. Yep. Orlando's a great place to be if you're a dominant big, and I sort of own them. I'm going to get in Ronadive's ear. Maybe we can get Boogie, and like, we love centers. We love, like, you know, really flawed 7-foot white centers. In fact, like, our GM is one of those. And like, we're gonna trade Boogie for, you know, Jeff Green. He would fit perfectly on the Kings. Boogie to the Magic. I feel it.
I am a Boogie fan. I think you give him the right coach. Like, Frank Vogel and Mike Malone, I think, have very similar demeanors. Guys that are going to kind of, they're not going to yell. They're not yellers. They kind of treat you with respect. They just put their work in. And I think, like, I think Cousins respected that out of Malone, and certainly the winning helped. I'm not against the idea. Anytime though, you make a deal like this, you got to think about the contracts a little bit. If the Magic do that, do they feel like they have enough to keep Boogie? Is Biombo, Boogie, Gordon frontline a long-term core? It actually doesn't sound that bad when you think about it, but it's all about results on the court. And I don't know what Cousins' contract situation is like, but it's not a deal I make if it's just a rental.
He's got 13 next year and then 13 the year after.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, if you do it at this year's deadline, I think it certainly makes sense, because then you have your star, you have your guy you can build around, and now you can start moving pieces around and start attracting free agents. Because that's the name of the game. With building these teams, you build through the draft, you hope you get a guy that you can market and start winning. You start winning, you make the playoffs, doors start opening with free agents, and you can start really building a legitimate team that can challenge.
Yeah. I have not really thought about the Cousins Magic pairing really before just now, but I think that's interesting. But it's so speculative at this point. Let's round out this podcast. Yeah. More tangible things, more birds that are in the hand as opposed to in the bush. So let's just quick run through free agent signings. We'll start with Jeff Green. 1 to 10, what do you think? What do you think he does? He comes off the bench. Is he a starter? You know.
I think Jeff Green is a decent signing. I'd give it a 6. I know Green has his issues, his consistency issues, but yeah. He, every once in a while he'll give you a game that just makes you believe in him again. He's likely coming off the bench. It wouldn't surprise me if you see some lineups where he's playing alongside Aaron Gordon, with them kind of flip-flopping between the 3 and the 4. It looks like the plan is to use him as the backup 3/backup 4. So it's going to be a very fluid lineup. I think you'll see at least one starter in for most of the game. I kind of envision a 9-man rotation actually with this team.
Yeah.
But I think Green's veteran leadership is going to be valuable. I think he'll be able to produce on the court. He certainly has a little bit left in the tank, but not maybe as consistently as a star or starter type guy. Not enough to displace Aaron Gordon, but they play so similarly that it'll be a good challenge for Gordon in practice and kind of keep him sharp.
Okay, yeah, I would agree with all of that. And then...
And 1 year, and like everyone got crazy about the money.
Yeah.
It's just 1 year. At the deadline, if there's a team that's looking to clear cap room, even with the cap going up another $10 million, that contract becomes valuable again. And if it doesn't work out, it only costs you $15 million for 1 year.
Yeah, that makes sense. They could try to do what the Pistons did to y'all last year, right?
Yeah.
Trade expiring contracts for a star to a team that aspirations.
Exactly. And like the way the Pistons kind of talked about that Tobias Harris trade was they were saying Tobias is our free agent signing for this year. They essentially just used their empty cap space to get Tobias Harris. And, maybe that's how the Magic find a deal like that that helps them long term.
I was going to ask about Meeks and Augustine, but like whatever, they're fine. They're going to come off the bench.
Yeah.
Great.
Solid
last
players.
Thing I want to talk about, and I thought that the free agents were the last thing, but then I remembered that I never touched on, what are your thoughts about the small ball lineup with Ibaka at 5, Aaron Gordon at 4, and who's 3-2-1 in that?
I was all about the Ibaka small ball lineup. When the Magic made the Ibaka trade, I was like, this is going to be amazing. They're going to have Serge Ibaka play the 5. He's going to be back in the paint, kind of roaming. I think the league has changed so much in the last 2-3 years at the center position, or at the 4 position especially. Almost everyone has a stretch 4.
Yeah.
And I would surmise that a lot of the reason Ibaka's block numbers are down is because he has to stay on the perimeter, stay in the corner and guard the 3-point shot more than roam the paint. So I thought moving him back to the 5 and having Gordon there next to him and just having the super switchy lineup was going to be just brilliant for the Magic. And I wasn't a big proponent. Like, a lot of Magic fans and a lot of Orlando people were big on bringing Chandler Parsons back to Orlando. He's from the Orlando area. I was not a big fan of that. I'm still not a huge Chandler Parsons guy, but having the ability to have Ibaka, Gordon, Parsons, obviously this didn't happen, Fournier, Payton, you can switch almost all those guys at any time. And so now pick and rolls or, any screen that a team sets against you is pretty much irrelevant.
Yeah.
And I really like that idea. It seems to be the direction the NBA is going. So I would love to see some Ibaka-Gordon lineups. I think it would be really, really, really productive for this team.
Well, I mean, I think that like...
Against certain lineups, yeah.
I mean, in terms of offense, like Biombo switches. Biombo's great.
Yeah.
Biombo can switch anything. I think the key reason why I think Vucevic, if I, point A on my A Brilliant Mind, is that the movie where the guy has the big board?
A Beautiful Mind.
Mind, right. My Beautiful Mind web would start with point A, big red push pin. Vucevic can't switch on defense. Like, that would be the center of my web of Magic insanity. So
he can barely hedge.
Yeah, right. So what do you want out of your center? Like, rim protection and the ability to switch and help defense.
And like, everyone's kind of told me, where are the Magic going to get scoring if we trade Vucevic? And I'm just like, look, in today's NBA, I'd rather have a center who can't score but defends like a trap than a center who can't defend and can only score. And that's the problem.
And to be honest, Biombo projects statistically. I'm not sure about the Carmelo thing, but there was an article someone wrote for me. Mitch, shout out Mitch. You do a great job, dude. That was about the difference makers in the 4 conference finals teams and One of them was about the Raptors because they were there. And one of the two players that he wrote about was Biombo. And he wrote a good statistical comparison of Biombo next to DeAndre Jordan. And that looks like it's going in that direction. And, like, I think Biombo's good. I think that his downside is that he's good. You know, that he's, like, a starting level player. His upside, if his upside is, like, a less leapy DeAndre Jordan, that's awesome. You know?
Yeah, that'll get the job done.
Yeah.
I mean, the Magic are going to go from, you know, a bottom half of the league defensive team. You know, if they start Biombo, which I don't think's guaranteed quite yet, although I think it's inevitable with this contract, they're going to go from a bottom half defensive team to one of the top 10 defenses in the league. And like we said, that gets you in the conversation for the playoffs, no matter where you are, essentially.
Yeah, that would be an interesting bet. Like, how long does it take for Biombo to take Vucevic's starting position?
Yeah. Well, we know it'll be more than one game because Biombo can't play that first game.
Oh, is he suspended?
He's suspended. He's suspended for the first game of the season. Flagrant foul accumulation. Oh, he picked up a flagrant in game 6.
Oh, I wish I could have just laughed at that joke instead of had you explain it.
you can cut this part out.
Hey, I just laughed. This will work out great. I can move that audio around. Like, just don't worry about it. So, thanks, Philip, for coming on and talking to me about the Orlando Magic. We've just about rounded out an hour, and what a magical hour it was. I wasn't preparing that. That just came to me. That's why I host a podcast, and you host a podcast because, as made evident to the listeners, you're a great guest. You know a lot about the Magic. So, one last time for the fans at home, where can they find your writing on the net? Follow you on Twitter and just your Twitter.
Twitter. My Twitter account is @OMagicDaily. You can find my writing mostly at OrlandoMagicDaily.com. I also contribute to Hardwood Paroxysm as well.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone cares about Northwestern football, but you can find my Northwestern ramblings at Wildcat Digest.
Hey, I love Northwestern. Did you say Wildcats?
Go Wildcats.
Yeah, go Wildcats. All right, well, hey, thanks again, Philip, and again, you've been listening to All Money Ballin'. Follow me at All Money Profit, like the Facebook page for allmoneyballer.com, and listen to podcasts like this and more on the All Money Baller Podcast Network, and have a great night, get some sleep. If it's, like, morning time for you, then don't get some sleep, have a good day, and we'll talk to you guys later.